I hope everyone's honeymoon is going well. It's a strange honeymoon because it's a honeymoon between a hum and a hum. It's a very odd paradox, one of many very odd paradoxes embedded in what we think of as reality, designed by a very extraordinary intelligence that seems to prefer paradox to linear logic. And that's because paradox creates an energy field, like every duality. And that creates Shakti. That creates the movement of the energy that produces the unfoldment and revelation of all the secrets that are implicit and embedded in the script of the unfolding theodrama in which we are all participating and co-authoring. So one of the paradoxes is the world is like a film that has already been shot. It's finished. It's complete. You're watching a finished product. We're beyond post-production here. We're beyond, you know, all. There's no way to fix or change anything, okay? It's done. That's truth. But there's another truth. It's fixed only within chronos time. You see? But if you get to the ion, which is that level of the real that is eternal and timeless, then every moment is the first moment. And it is the moment from which everything becomes determined. So there's absolute predetermination, but because there's really no time, there's nothing pre. There's nothing prior to the present moment, nor nothing after. Presence is eternal. And in that presence, there is absolute freedom. It's the only place in which there is freedom of will to change what seems to be already fixed, because in eternity nothing is fixed. And yet, if you enter that place of the absolute self and say, I want to change the script, you will realize there's nothing to change because it's perfect already. And anything you want to change has already been changed because you have already done it, because everything that could occur has already occurred. And in the absolute present, that is realized. The perfection is also eternal, could not be improved upon. But for the ego running through the rat maze of Chronos time, it's very imperfect. And there's no free will to change anything, even though there seems to be. But what there seems to be, it turns out only to be the soundtrack of the mental apparatus of the ego. And that soundtrack, which says, I want to change things, I want to do something different, I want to do this, 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 or this, that's already what has been predetermined and can't be changed. That's the character. That's the script. So if you want to make a change in the script, you have to shift from being the character in the movie that's already shot to being the playwright and the cinematographer that is shooting it at this moment in eternity. Otherwise, the narrative of the ego will always be one of lack, one of unhappiness, one of wishing things were different, one of hating the situation, blaming the other for one's unhappiness, etc., etc. And one cannot change that. No matter how things change in the physical plane, that narrative will always remain. It's inherent to an ego, because what the ego is really complaining about is its own lack of being. It has no essence. And so it wants power, it wants glory, it wants agency, it wants dominance, it wants possessiveness, it wants all of the things that it can never get enough of. Even the billionaires can't get enough power to actually achieve what they want to achieve. No one gets satisfaction at the ego level. And yet, if and only if you cut the soundtrack, you stop the narrative of the ego, in the stillness of the mind, you enter into eternity and you change that narrative. Not by creating a new ego narrative, actually, but by downloading the mind of God into the character that is in the eternal present, in which everything is already perfect. And the narrative then of imperfection can never return. And that magically changes the unfoldment of the drama from what it would have been if you had remained in the character with a narrative of unhappiness. Because the unhappiness within creates a situation where it will be reflected from outside. And so the ego strategy of being angry at the other and wanting to change things in the phenomenal plane instead of within is a very stupid strategy. It cannot lead to success. It can only bring further bondage. It can only create more karma, because it's an act of running away from oneself rather than accepting what is and turning within to recognizing its perfection and then seeing that there is an opening in the present for a complete transformation, a complete self-empowerment, a complete total expansion into the divine nature that will change things miraculously, not only in the immediacy of the environment, but through the magic of synchronicity, will change the unfoldment of unpredictable events that will bring blessings and good fortune that could not have been even imagined by the limited intelligence of the ego mind. And so you're cheating yourself of the real power, the real intelligence, and the real option for bringing grace into your life by holding on to the soundtrack instead of leaving that on the cutting room floor in your own post-production process of creating a free space for new creative intelligence to shift the way that your character perceives reality by opening the third eye and perceiving with the vision of the intelligence of God. But that intelligence can only open up when the heart is in a state of love, of adoration. The problem here is another paradox. who is it that loves God? Since God is yourself, your real self, who is it? Do you have two selves? One that loves the other or should love the other? No, there's only one self. You may have many voices in your ego mind, yes, that's true. Different fragments, different ego self-images and self-concepts and different superego voices and different fantasies, etc., etc. But there's only one awareness that perceives all of that. But that awareness is not the ego. And once that awareness locates itself in a dimension of presence that is no longer immanent, but is in a kind of virtual reality dimension to the actual reality of the unfoldment of the phenomenal activity of the body, then that from that dimension, which we can call soul, one is able to connect with the absolute self in that eternal space that we have tonight called the Ion, but which you could call by any names. It's the Paramdhamma, it's the Buddha nature, it's the Tathagata Garbha. It doesn't matter what your terminology is, but it's that space of I amness which has no other, and which is no longer perceiving in subject-object duality. So the I of the real self can never be reduced to a signifier, can never be reduced to a thought, can never be reduced to an image or a concept. Literally, yourself is inconceivable, because the self is the perceiver of all, but cannot be perceived by any of the entities that it, I, is dreaming. It's it if you're in the character, and it's I if you realize the truth. But because it can't be conceived of, and the ego can only use thought to try to grasp reality, the ego is useless. But the ego can't silence its own mind. It's an automaton. The ego is an artifact of the mind. It itself is a signifier that rises and sets in the mind. So the only agency that can make a change by silencing that narrative that is going on by its own power is the state of pure presence. That presence is what is aware of the mind and of the body and of the game that the ego is playing. But somehow you forget that you are that presence, and you fall into identification with the mental object of the automatic narrative that's playing in the inner soundtrack, and then that identifies you with the physical body, and now your freedom that your awareness has in its own inherent nature is lost by identification with a character that has no free will. So it's a matter of remembering, of coming out of forgetfulness, of the fact that you are aware. Your primary nature is awareness, not thinking, not sensing, not acting as a body, but the awareness thereof, of all of those levels of the instruments that are dreamed, manifested, produced by the creative imagination of the awareness that derives its capacity to perceive from the God self. And from that place in the virtual reality, there is a power sufficient because of the nature of the soul as love, divine love, for that real self, that though it cannot be conceived, it can be palpably felt at the soul level as God's love of you as the soul. And it's that adoration, that mutuality of adoration of soul and God, that lifts you into the ascended state of the Holy Spirit, and you become one with the Godhead. That is the way to ascend immediately from all the bondages that the narrative of the ego is producing. And that inherent power is yours to use in every moment simply by remembering just that virtual reality level that you are aware of the world and the body and the mind, and therefore it cannot be what you are. And because you are aware of all of it, you cannot be limited to one element of your perception, which is the body, which you can't even perceive entirely yourself anyway. It's a part of the phenomenal reality from which you are alienated. If you weren't alienated from your own body, you wouldn't need doctors. You wouldn't need psychiatrists if you weren't alienated from your own mind. Not that they help. You wouldn't need any outside other to affirm you or validate you or tell you, yes, you really exist and you're worthy and et cetera, et cetera, because you'd have self-possession. You'd have that realization from your own inherent being. But your being, your inherent being, is given to the virtual, to the self that is awareness, through that absolute eternal presence that transcends all possibility of conception and can only be reached through the total stillness of all of the obscuring vibrational frequencies of the ego. And ultimately, even the love of God becomes an obstacle until it is consummated as the truth of union, which is what love is. It's not a yearning for union. It's not an aspiration. It is the union of your attention and the absolute source of presence that is always, paradoxically, as long as it is projected into the body, both in duality and in non-duality. You are simultaneously in nirvana as the God Self, transcendent of all worlds and all time and space, and immanent in this phenomenal play, film, holographic event that is underway, that we have all as manifestations of that one intelligence decided to perform as a kind of omprav of cosmic dimensions. And we have volunteered to be in this play and play the part that we have played, but with the free will at every moment to divinize the character that we think we are playing by bringing the full empowerment of our divine nature consciously into the body. So we first liberate the consciousness from the body. There has to be the fission from all identifications and all attachments, and then the fusion with the absolute real, but then that fusion with the phenomenal plane of samsara itself, so that samsara becomes fully nirvana. And it's that that completes our function. And will provide the final glory of the grand finale of this holographic spectacular in which we are all engaged in playing our assigned, self-assigned parts. And so until you accept that your part indeed was chosen by you, you chose to be born into the conditions you were born into, you chose all of the karmic history and trajectory, and all of it has been freely designed to motivate you to want liberation from the bondages you created for yourself as a handicap that would enable you to gain great wisdom in the process of the quest for self-liberation. So here's another paradox. To be liberated, to achieve Jivan Mukti, you have to achieve God realization first. Because without God realization, how are you going to let go of all of your attachments and all of your identifications and all of that sense of karma and of unhappiness that's in the soundtrack? Right? But you can't achieve God realization until you've achieved Jivan Mukti. So we have a little catch 22. God loves these, you know. But you created this little game. But it's very easy to solve this. It's only an apparent problem because you are already liberated. There is no one in bondage. And there never was. It's only the soundtrack that creates that illusion. And so, again, both liberation and God realization come instantly with the remembrance of who you are. Therefore, it's effortless and can only happen effortlessly. The more effort you put in, the further away you will be from the goal. Shiva loves those paradoxes. But remember, you are Shiva. So this is the situation of love. We have to go even beyond the paradigm of faith in Shiva. It's just aham, aham. The self has no name, no form. There's no point in some ritual formula of prayer or mantra. There's no one to pray to God because God is all there is. And so even your bhakti becomes an obstacle because you're ratifying some sense of duality. But that's in the script, you see. But if the bhakti is authentic devotion because it's love and love is union, the non-duality will be realized when the love is authentic and total. That's what has to happen. The problem is that the ego has only conditional and limited partial love. And then everyone outside of the circle of the loved ones are demonized, or one doesn't care about them at all. And so because all are the self, if you don't care about yourself or a huge amount of yourself, how will you be liberated? You have to bring all of you with you into liberation. No element of your own beauty and creative genius can be left behind. And so this requires, at the individual level, a death and a rebirth. A death of disbelief in the soundtrack and disinterest in it, so that you can push the pause button and then have the space in the virtual reality to delete the program entirely, and then effortlessly realize the absolute self that you are. There is no difficulty in this. None. And if you think there is, you're buying into the soundtrack of the ego. And it will create an unlimited number of difficulties and obstacles. And you solve one, you'll find there's another and another. And if you can't be reasoned by the superego out of believing that you are the infinite self, then your attention will be diverted into symptoms of suffering that will take up all of your time and attention, and you won't have the ability to focus on the virtual and the absolute reality, which is your true abode. So you're in a video game in which there are designed obstacles, and only by overcoming those through your awakened intelligence can you win the game. And if you don't win the game, you gotta play it again. And over for an eternity. If that's what you want because you like the game, you can do that. But you also have the right and the power to graduate from the game and liberate yourself. And in the meantime, change your script to allow that very event to take place. But you have to activate your power by disbelieving the soundtrack completely. Or else, you're allowing that automaton to impersonate you. And then there's no real you. You've let the false self take over and the real self disappear into it. Or else your real self is revealed and the false one disappears. Which do you prefer? But at some point, a decision between the real and the false will have to be made. And until it is made, nothing else can happen. But it can't be made by the ego. It can only be made by that aspect of your consciousness that is already free of its bondages. So I don't want to belabor the point. It's really very simple, and I think it's clear. But one has to sustain one's love for the real self long enough to silence the soundtrack and recognize one's soul nature and its power to delete the program and be absorbed into the absolute self. That's all. But until that decisive action has taken place. You'll go around the same track over and over again. Even if it seems like you're making progress, it will always be one or two steps up and then two or three down, and it will be a constant roller coaster that really ultimately never goes anywhere. And to stabilize in the soul level of consciousness requires adapting to a silent mind and being able to intuitively grok what is happening and what needs to be done, and being open to downloading insight from that supreme level that understands everything from a non-temporal perspective. And the flow of that information, the Tao, will take over from the sanskaras of the ego and produce accurate action that no longer produces karmic bondage. But that happens also effortlessly and spontaneously, because the ego isn't doing it. It's being acted and moved by the higher power of the soul surrendered to God and receiving the grace and the power of God, the Shaktipat, that moves it, that moves your body and your consciousness through time and space from the eternal present. So this is the process of transformation and transcendence that frees one from the wheel of life and death. So I think that's all I have to say in terms of jnana. But someone in our online sangha has asked me to read for a recording they want to do one of the songs of the Tao of the Final Days, and I agreed to do that. So I hope that no rain or thunder will impair my ability to give an adequate recording, and my voice will hold out for that. But we're also now entering into, because of the nature of the poem itself, a consideration of current events within the phenomenal plane. And since most ego minds have been absorbed into following the news or the disinformation, depending on what news site you're looking at, about what's happening in the Middle East, it seemed perhaps for a few days that there was a lull and maybe cooler minds were taking over and reconsidering, or more frightened minds perhaps realizing the foolhardiness of escalating this conflict and turning it into a regional or a global war. But apparently that was not the case. And in fact, this time has been used for logistical preparations, political final positioning, and diplomatic efforts to get allies to support the efforts. You saw that Blinken went to Egypt, and Egypt refused to let the Gazans evacuate into the Sinai, and in the meantime, another aircraft carrier group is moving into the Mediterranean full speed, and we see other movements on both sides, all sides, of troops and material into their positions, ready to launch a full-scale attack. both sides preparing for this. So it seems clear, and especially after today, a hospital called the Baptist Hospital, of all things, in Gaza was bombed. The Israelis swear it wasn't them who did it, but there is some, very few are buying that, and there's some evidence to the contrary. I won't get into that, but the point is that the Arabs, including the Turks, by the way, who are a NATO country nominally, are siding with the Palestinians. And so, again, we see ever more ruptures within all of the power blocks and chaos on every side, but at the same time, a determination to go through this mass destruction. So it seems clear that if the invisible rulers of the planet could not achieve depopulation through lethal medical interventions, then they can do it easily and quickly through global war. And that seems to be the plan B that is now underway. So for those who are awake and aware and not in denial of what is happening, it would seem that the urgency for a spiritual transformation, that being the only power left to us in this situation, is of such clarity, our only option and highest priority, even if we want to bring some vibrations of peace and love into the world to try to affect the morphogenic field to prevent this ultimate disaster. Whether it can be prevented or not, that is the way for us to free ourselves of bondage to this ultimate unfoldment of the drama, which is now the movement of the angel of death over the world. And if you want it to pass over your particular abode, then it's not the sacrifice of a ram that's going to help you this time. It's only the sacrifice of the ego. And so that blood of the ego should be put on your doorways immediately as the only real mezuzah that will have effect in this final Passover that we are living through. So with that, I'll read this poem. It's song 18, and the title is Any Day Now. When the Tao is abandoned by the people, kindness and justice rise in value. When those virtues have degraded, they are replaced by the discourse of reason, which soon devolves into the facile ideology of pseudo-scientism. Hypnotized by technological wonders, the masses of people are deceived. Their education is dumbed down, and they are slowly turned into fools who accept their own enslavement so long as it is called protection. When foul play is the method of the rulers and traitors take control of the thrones. They demand strict obedience from all, especially when they order the entire population to commit suicide. You can hear the mountains call. It is time to slip away. The system will fall any day. Okay, I hope that was read with sufficient clarity. And let's see, we still have time, so the floor is open if anyone has any comments on any of that or any questions. Please go to the mic and feel free to speak.
I have a question about karma and the unfoldment in time.
Mm.
So I experience now a lot of physical pain in the last couple of months, and it seems to be related to some things I had already in early childhood, like operations and adjustments of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems just to come back. So I wonder... I had understood maybe that was my karma from a past life, what I experienced in childhood, and it was played out. But it seems to come back now. So, do you have any comments on that? Or
instead of trying to understand this as some kind of effect of past karma, think of it as a teleological effort by your liberated self to motivate you to kill the ego, because the pain is located in the ego, not in the body even. It's referred pain. It's projected into the body, but the pain always comes from the manomaya kosha. It's always a mental belief in a certain concept of reality, of yourself, of the past, that creates anguish and pain that is too unbearable to fully recognize within one's consciousness, and so it has to be projected into the body and somatized, so that one actually feels some relief. Because if it's fully in the mental body and it's unbearable, it could literally drive someone mad or into such a state of despair that they'd be suicidal or homicidal or in some other mode of emotional out-of-controlness, that their ability to live would be in danger. So this is always a mode of trying to limit and distribute the pain through a number of different sheaths, rather than to have it all located and have to be consciously encountered in the manomaya kosha. But as soon as you recognize that none of those koshas pertain to you, and that the teleological cause of this effect in the body being to awaken you to the fact that you're not a bodily being, you were never born, you have no past karma, you are actually the Supreme Self, if you will take that really seriously, I will promise that the pain and the suffering over the pain will be relieved and may be entirely released, or at least be so out of your attention that it doesn't cause any disturbance, and your consciousness can remain in peace and freedom, and all of the healing capacities of the pranic body, the mental, the vijnanamaya kosha, and the energy of soul and pure spirit will be able to be fully applied to the healing of the symptom in the physical organism. So rather than try to parse out what in the past might still be a problem I'm working with, that's only a valid paradigm from within the chronos level of the ego. But it has no relevance once you're in kairos time and you reach the ion at the center of your being. And then from there, you send the grace of Shakti to heal the body. Okay, so that's what I think is what you're being called to recognize in full now, to free yourself not only from this pain, but from the underlying pain that has caused the need for this, which was the identification with the body and with the situation and the karma and the projections of others on you that are still operating internally within the subconscious of the ego, that are all participating in creating the agony that is being expressed through the particular symptom. But the agony is one that has to do with your own separation from the God self, not with anything on the phenomenal plane. And that's where the potential of healing quickly and completely will really derive from.
So would you take the pain as a door to liberation, and let's say recommend to endure it instead of going to a doctor or take painkillers or stuff like that?
Well, you do what you need to do, okay? So I'm not, there may be times when painkillers, as long as you are in that, may be of use, and doctors may be of use for limited purposes. I think in most cases they are of very little use, frankly, but you know, you shouldn't make it a rule about anything. The real question is, who are you? And when you recognize that you're the soul, the referred pain in the body will no longer affect you directly, because the virtual reality level of your being is not subject to pain or suffering. And you'll be aware of it in the body, but because you're no longer identified, it won't be your pain. You'll feel compassion for the body that may be in pain, but you will not feel that as your own, and you'll recognize that God's power flows through you and can heal that pain, because it does come from a spiritual separation from your true nature that now can be healed through the grace of your recognition of the God self as your own true I. And in that state, when the mind has been silenced and all of its objections, oh, that's not possible, it can't be true, but look, what about this, what about that, I need to see a doctor, all those things that the mind will try to cause you to not be able to reach, when you have silenced that, you will see that in the stillness of eternal presence, the pain can be completely released forever, and you can remain liberated in your true nature, and your life will be divinized. And that's the purpose of this symptom in your life now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Blessings.
Thank you, Shunya, for the coherence and power of the teachings tonight. And I have also a question that came up from the Joseph Campbell documentary we watched the other night, and he was speaking about this myth, or the creation myth, where God had created the angels and then the humans, and he had commanded the angels to bow to the humans in some way. And the one that loved God the most was Satan, who he then banished into a hell realm of separation from God. And it seems to relate to the way the ego has been banished into this sense of separation from God. And I didn't totally understand why the one who loved God the most and was unwilling to bow to the humans because of his love for God was then punished in this way. Yeah. I didn't understand that.
Okay, that's an Islamic myth, by the way. It's from the Quran. It's not the Christian version of Lucifer, but it is the Islamic version, and there's a great deal of truth to it. But the only way to understand it properly is to see it through the paradigm of non-duality. So the angels are us as souls, right? All the souls are originally angels. They are God's direct creation of beams of light that emanate from the source. Light and love and intelligence. Each soul is a microcosm of the God self. Those souls are sent to earth in order to serve the world, to serve God through serving humans with compassion. Our job is to be here as bodhisattvas, in other words. The Quran wouldn't use that word, but that's the intention. That we lost our compassion and our willingness to serve. And so, yes, some still have love of God, but most have lost that love of God. And those who keep that love of God will be returned by grace into a God consciousness. But it's only when we recognize that we entered into a hell realm because we misunderstood that the will of God was to serve others who were also actually parts of God, that we mistook for being other than God and therefore refused to serve. So again, it was the hubris of the soul perceiving through duality instead of non-duality that created the whole problem, not God's punishment, but our own self-punishment through the separation of our perception into subject-object duality, and then demonizing some of the objects, some of the others, many of the others in the world, and refusing to give them our divine love. And so that our love has to be unconditional and for all, and only then are we serving according to the will of God, and then all will be returned into the light of God. And that is the final scene of this beautiful theodrama that God has designed in his wisdom, that is our own wisdom, that is the love of the goddess as well. And so all of those apparently separate agencies of the divine will are being reunited into oneness. Does that help?
Yeah, it's beautiful. And it seems to apply at all the levels, right? Like you were just speaking about what's happening in the Middle East and these polarizations and these forces demonizing one another and trying to gain power by defeating others. And that same thing is happening within my own mind.
Yes.
And trying to, I feel like my mind is always trying to figure out what's wrong with me and how can I fix it. Yep. Where both of those levels of the demonization, whether it's in my own mind of parts of myself or in the phenomenal plane with nations can be healed, or can only be healed by this unification.
Yes, that's a very powerful insight, and it's accurate, except that it's not your own mind. It's the mind of a character that is impersonating you. And its narrative, you have fallen into deceptively believing is your own, and it's not. This is the video game of your ability to remember who you are and free yourself. You are the angel still. Even if a fallen angel, you are the angel. You're not the ego. You're not the body or the body's operating system. And so its narratives are not yours. And it's only when you realize that, that you can re-divinize your body itself as an instrument to fulfill the will of God and create non-duality of all the levels of consciousness, from the absolute and the level of the goddess and the energy of creation, with all the created levels of your consciousness, the sheaths of all your bodies, and the self that feels as if it is embodied as a particular entity. All of those levels now can be unified into the single realization of the one self.
That's beautiful. And I hear it, and I've heard you say these beautiful explanations so many times, and I see that it's the belief in the narratives and the wanting to continue listening to the soundtrack that, like, when I'm here listening to you speak it, there's a different kind of energy internally, a different vibration than when I'm in the mode of listening to the soundtrack. It's it's hard to remember that, and
that's it. It's the key is remembering, and then using all of your power, your willpower, to silence the soundtrack. And if you keep it silent for a significant period, then the intervention of the real self can come in and depotentiate that soundtrack forever, and then it will no longer repeat. And new information that comes from the supreme mystery of God's ultimate intelligence will enter in and become a new operating system for the body that is fully in the vibrational frequency of the Tao, or the will of God, the Logos, in which all actions will be spontaneous and without a soundtrack.
Well, hopefully the most beautiful soundtrack emerges from that space.
There will be audible sound that will be made, yes. You see, the Shaivites say there's four levels of sound. There's the sound your voice makes with its vocal cords, etc. And then there is the level of thought. And then beyond that, there is the source of thought in the archetypal level of your being. But the ultimate is the inconceivable self that causes its own thought patterns and activation to move through all the levels of your being and then activate your actual voice of the body to be a replica of the voice of the silence. And then beautiful words, beautiful music, beautiful art, beautiful creativity of every kind comes out of the bodily instrument.
Thank you so much, Shinya.
Thank you. Blessings.
Yeah, I'll start with just thanks for this teaching. I think it was like one of the most clear and potent ones.
Good.
I think we should watch it for the next 10 Jnana videos.
You may have some people disagreeing, but if they want it, they can have that. Yes, thank you.
So, sort of like a random comments last question, but maybe it'll be helpful to something inside and then to other people. But yeah, so sometimes when talking about like liberation or like coming out of the cycle and birth and death, like the words, and I know like language itself is inadequate. So like it doesn't really express the full truth. But yeah, like sometimes it's like graduating from the cycle of life and death and not reincarnating anymore. And then it's almost like that sounds like a bad thing where it's like you don't get to exist anymore, but then it's graduating into eternity where you're done forever, or you're like forever done, as in like a you're always complete, or like you've kind of transcended. And then like there is like a, I feel like there's a truth where our real self is everyone, everyone's journey, everything. So it doesn't really stop. So is it the soul that's finished, or?
Well, when you are here in the state of Jivan Mukti, and your character is still alive, but your character will have been divinized, you will be able to be in the wheel of life and death, but not of it any longer, because you are an eternal being who is not born nor dies, but you'll be able to act the part of a living being who is apparently mortal without suffering at all and being in a state of total joy and bliss. That's mahasukha. That's turning samsara into nirvana. And you know, it's only in the final phase of the whole time cycle that humans now have amnesia for. They don't remember Satyuga, Treta Yuga, and Dwapar Yuga. They only think Kali Yuga. And before that, we were cavemen or, you know, crustaceans in the ocean or something. That you know, we didn't have higher civilizations. And because we don't have a clear history of that, we don't recognize that we are in the most fallen state now. And the other lives are incredible adventures and miraculous, cosmically alive and potent divine beings acting far beyond the limitations of this planetary existence with extraordinary capacities. We had vimanas that could travel intergalactically at beyond light speed. We had all kinds of technology so far beyond anything that exists now that these are just toys. We have no idea of what we were able to create with an infinite intelligence, and we now have one tiny sliver of that. And most people, even that is incoherent. But in our fullness of being, we create adventures that are so far beyond anything the greatest novelist could imagine that you don't have to miss out on that if you want to enjoy that. But you're going to enjoy it from that eternal space in which nothing's happening at all. It's just a dream. None of it is real. But it's your own creative imagination producing beauty and joy and every kind of the most exquisite texture of feelings and production of beauty of forms and of artistry of every kind that is what the creation is really all about. It's the activation of that is one aspect of liberation. And the other is the fact that you are in the transcendent light and you are never dirtied by incarnation at all. But it's the paradox of both being true and being a unified whole at that level of the absolute self that is the incredible prize that you are able to win through this process of self-liberation.
Yeah, okay. So, is there really any part of us that's lost?
No.
In death or...
Well, anything? The part that believes it is lost has lost itself, but your real self can never be lost, no.
So then there's no real thing that's lost?
No, you're playing a part. Your character has to pretend it's lost in order to be found again, you know? That's the great joy of the prodigal son, you know? You have to go through that. And then the joy of your own redemption and grace is so great that it was worth going through the dark night of the soul and feeling lost. Let's do it again, you know? And that's why we go through this. We love our tragedies, you know, and our hero's quests and all of the things we have to go through in order to finally receive the grace that makes it all worthwhile. But we know in advance that it's coming because we have designed the whole play. So it's all beautiful and perfect, no matter how horrendous it looks. And when you know there's no death and no real suffering because it's God who's experiencing everything, not a bunch of suffering beings who are lost. No, that's just the apparent superficial level of the movie. But the actors aren't suffering in the movie, you know, and they have their doubles that do all of the real tricks anyway, you know, which happen to be our soul consciousness. So the real acting is all done by the oneself, and through the medium of the souls, and then the bodies are just the masks that we wear. And we pretend we're suffering and we have pain and we have karma and blah, blah, blah. But none of it is real. And it's because bliss is the only real truth of our being that we allow this to go on and then eventually end it with a gigantic fireworks show. And in one day, all the souls go back into the light.
Thank you very much.
Blessings. Okay, well, time is up. Oh, we have one from online? Okay, go for it.
Okay, this comes from Carl. By grace, we eliminate all narratives through adoration of the absolute. And the last narrative standing is the truth?
Well, the truth is not a narrative. The last narrative is probably Shivoham. Okay, it's just that simple. God is I. Not I, the ego, am God, no, but God is the real I that's animating this body. But even that is only the penultimate narrative. The final one is Aham. That's it. There's only I without a name. It's not God, it's not the ego, it's not the soul, it's not anything. It's an inconceivable truth that is so real that there's no way that it could be signified or represented in language or in any other form of our imagination, because it's the source of our imagination and our intelligence. That I is what we are here and now. And once you know that, all narratives end. And this satsang ends as well. Namaste. Namaste.